All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What's happening? This is Mark Maron. It's my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Right up front, well, let me tell you first, I'm pre-recording this. It's a couple days before the day you'll hear it. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm sitting here in a hotel room, 22 floors above the ground. I shot all day today. I was in the studio all day today doing a bit. I'm doing a scene. These scenes that we're working on, they revolve around songs for the movie Respect with Jennifer Hudson, myself, and others, and Marlon Wayans. And these are long and fairly complicated scenes to shoot in that there's no stunts involved, but there's singing and there's musicians. And it's a whole day to shoot some of these musical sequences that take place in the studio. But I got to be honest with you. It's been pretty great. It's like maybe I'm just figuring out how to be on a set. Maybe I'm just accepting that this is a job I do. It's part of the things I do with my life. I don't know what it is, but being in this character and in this situation and in the late 60s, you know, at Atlantic Records, recording Aretha Franklin is kind of an exciting thing, man. And it just, I don't know. I've just sort of locked into the gig of it. And I'm not even talking a lot these few days. But I'm enjoying the work. Is that okay? Is that okay if I enjoy the work? Thank God. Thank God I'm enjoying my work, folks. And I also want to tell you, the WTF cap mugs that were available for the holiday sold out really fast. As you know, they always do. So Brian Jones made a brand new batch. These are the handmade ceramic mugs I give to my guests. You can get one for yourself right now. People love these things. You can go to brianrjones.com/shop starting at noon Eastern today. Okay? So that's happening. Those mugs are nice. I've run out of them several times. I don't stay on top of it as well as I should, and Brian's churning them out. So there's a good chance that some of you will get these over some of the guests. Some guests, I have to admit, leave empty-handed. I feel bad about it. I don't make choices around it. I don't decide who will get a mug and who won't. But some of them leave empty-handed, and I don't even tell them the mugs exist. And they don't know. What do they know? I will say this. My guest today, Randall Park, you know him from Fresh Off the Boat. You know him from the movie that he did with Ali Wong, You'll Always Be My Maybe. He's been around a long time. He's done a lot of things. But he brought a gift. He gave me a little Swiss Army pocket knife that was a crew gift for the Fresh Off the Boat people. And it was nice. Not very many people bring gifts. And oddly, Anderson .Paak and Randall Park both brought me gifts. I don't know what that's about. Is it the peas? The pea sound? I don't know. I'm not making connections where they aren't. Perhaps I am. Maybe it is the pea sound. My dates. Let's do this. I feel like I just talked to you. And I've really been doing nothing but shooting and trying to, to not eat on set all day. That's been what's been going on. And listening to Jennifer Hudson sing a lot. And having some laughs with Marlon Wayans. And hanging out with the crew, you know, doing that thing and being in Atlanta. But I was exhausted, so I'm in the room. I'll be honest with you. The reason I waited so long, because I'm recording this late at night, is The Town came on TV, the Ben Affleck movie, and I thought, I just watch a few minutes, and I watched the whole fucking thing. So that's what's happening in my life. I missed the debates, and I watched The Town, and, just hoping for the best. For the future with very little faith. So here are my dates. Thursday, January 30th, Cleveland, Ohio at the Agora Theater. This is for the tour I'm doing with Dean Del Rey. We're sort of half tied to it. It's the freezing leg of the Hey, There's More tour. Friday, January 31st, I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Fountain Street Church. Saturday, February 1st, I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Turner Hall Ballroom. Friday, February 14th, Orlando, Florida at the Hard Rock Live. Saturday, February 15th, I'm in Tampa, Florida at the Straz Center. Thursday, February 20th, Portland, Maine State Theater. Friday, February 21st, Providence, Rhode Island at the Columbus Theater. Saturday, February 22nd, New Haven, Connecticut at College Street Music Hall, and Sunday, February 23rd, Huntington, New York at the Paramount. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for links to all of the venues. And that's that. Tickets are selling well, and I appreciate that. Though I got word came in that Grand Rapids needs a little help. Orlando, Florida needs a little help. So those are the markets that I'm having a little, that aren't moving as quickly as they could. Michigan and Florida. Grand Rapids, Orlando. I don't know what the connection is, but that's what's going on. Oh, you guys, man. I don't know. Sometimes when I'm on the road, you know, I'm much more relaxed. I think I broke my back in two places. I'm still walking, and obviously I'm exaggerating, but I guess I've hit that age where perhaps maybe it's not a great idea to go heavy. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, just stay in shape. There's no reason to go heavy. I think I popped a vertebrae. I don't know what the hell I did. I guess I could ask the crew doc, the doc over at the chute, if there's a chiropractor situation. I've never been to a chiropractor in my life. I don't really know what to do. My best thinking gets me to the regular doctor where I get x-rays like a regular person, and I find out if there's anything seriously wrong, and then I figure out from the x-rays what the prognosis is, probably from a back guy, and then I weigh it out. That's how my brain works. Some people apparently are like, maybe you just drink some green juice, go to a chiropractor, and I don't know if that's going to hurt me more or isn't, but nonetheless, I think I might have done it. I think I might have fucked myself for the rest of my life in the back area, which happens to a lot of people over lesser things. I did it heroically at the gym. I'll deal with it. I got to deal with it. I know. I'm not complaining. I'm here making a movie. But I realize my life revolves around a certain amount of food panic and then a certain amount of introspection. And the way I situate my life on the road, I come back to the room, I walk a half a mile to the Whole Foods, and I make myself dinner at Whole Foods, and I sit there at, they have a beer bar at the Whole Foods downtown here, or midtown in Atlanta, and I eat it, and I watch the TV there with no sound. That was this evening. I was actually there, and I forgot to tell you about this. I was there on the night of the Golden Globes eating a sad salad at Whole Foods. And next to me, the only other guy sitting there was a guy wearing three different types of camo, a camo hat, a different kind of camo shirt, and different camo pants. And he was wearing sunglasses, and he was five beers in to a six pack of cans of some Mexican beer. And I told him that I had interviewed Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio. He said he grew up by Brad Pitt, went to a different high school, but they had common friends, and that he would like to listen to the podcast, but he does not have a phone or a computer, and that he's a country singer-songwriter, but real country. The conversation got weirder as the last couple beers went down, but I told him I'd look out for his music without knowing his name, and he said he'd listen to my podcast without having a phone or a computer. So I think that went about as good as it could. So yeah, I did just change the title to my special. It was originally going to be Jeremiah. This is the comedy special I just shot for Netflix, because there was complications with the name Jeremiah in that the folks at Netflix thought no one would know what the fuck that was. Probably true that they might have to look it up. But I mean, on a deeper note, it was that if they saw it, would they know it was a comedy thing? It just in the menu. I took that note. I realized they were probably right. So now the name of my special is going to be End Times Fun. Yep. I'm just telling it like it is. I'm going straight. That is what it is. It's End Times Fun. That's what I tried to do. That is the tone of the special. Also, on the cat front, got some good news about my cat Monkey. I'm just keeping you up to speed. Brought him in, which was an ordeal when I was just home just last week, to check his levels because he's got the hyperthyroid. I'm giving him the medicine. And so his thyroid now is a little low, so we got to bring the, you know, decrease the medicine, get the thyroid level, kidneys for his age, just starting with a little kidney disease. I think I told you that, but the blood work outside of that is spectacular. So I might have a little time with the old fucker. And I guess, you know, despite what anyone says, despite the outliers, despite the people that say, hey, man, I had a cat that died at age 40. He lived 40 years. I had this one cat was 57 years old when it died. I had a cat. We don't even know how old it was, but we think it was 102. Outside of those rare stories, 15 and a half is old for a fucking cat. I have an old ass cat, and I think he might hang in for a little while. I'm hoping. I need to pace these things out. I don't think I could handle putting another one down inside the same year, but if you got to do it, you got to do it. The other cat, Buster, Buster Kitten, bringing him in shortly to get his levels checked because he's been on the kidney food since the renal failure after he ingested what I believe to be lily pollen. So that's it. That's what's happening. I had Randall Park over at my house before I left, and I have to say it was really great to talk to him. And I talked to, obviously, Ali Wong about him. And I talked to Nanachka Khan about him a bit. And now I'm going to talk to Randall. The final season of Fresh Off the Boat on ABC returns this Friday, January 17th. And there's a special one-hour series finale Friday, February 21st. This is me back at the house talking to Randall Park. This is the right time.
This is everything's the right time right now for me.
You got nothing.
I got a root canal yesterday.
Oh, really?
And, it for 7 days I was in severe pain.
Really?
Yeah, I'd had this abscess in my tooth, and I couldn't get an appointment.
Right.
And I managed to get to squeeze in. Sometime with my dentist, he gave me these antibiotics.
Yeah.
They'll kick in.
Right,
7 days straight, severe pain.
Nothing?
I mean, I'd bite down on this tooth. I'd be rolling on the ground.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even enjoy the food?
Couldn't eat.
Oh, God.
And then I got an emergency appointment with this endodontic specialist that my dentist said, they'll see you. They'll make time
right.
to see you.
Right.
And they did some work, and I got a new lease on life. I'm like, you caught me at like one of the greatest.
This is it.
This is it.
A high point in life right now.
This is, I mean, I'm just like walking on a cloud right now.
Oh my God. So a whole
part of it is because of all the meds I'm on right now.
Oh, but, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But I feel, I'm telling you, this is.
The root canal is a wild process, isn't it? I got sort of kind of obsessed with the, you know, how the hell they think of that.
Yeah.
To you know, to sort of clean out these channels.
To go inside of a tooth.
Right, way up in there with these little brushes. Did they do that? Did you have the wires sticking out of your mouth?
Yeah, they did all that.
Clean out the channels.
Cleaned out the channels. And
just to keep the base so they can drill the new one on there.
They just want to keep that tooth in there, you know,
so
as
you
opposed to extracting it. And
so you got a fake, like a temporary...
I actually don't have anything in it. I just have like
the
some
nub?
Temporary just paste that they put on right now. I had a crown. On this tooth before they took off the crown,
right?
And it's
but they filed it all down, right? There's just
filed it all down.
There's just
made
a nub,
hole, just a little nub, and a hole that's filled with this. And I'm thrilled.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it.
But now you're waiting for a real tooth, right? You're waiting for the tooth.
I don't care. But yeah,
they're gonna build you one, right?
Yeah, they're gonna put one in there, and that's
so,
fine. I'm just fine. I'm just so good. I'm telling you, 7 days of just. Intense pain.
Torture.
Some of the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. And
teeth are the worst. They're scary, man. I can't even go to the fucking dentist without being terrified.
Oh, yeah, but you got to go, man.
I know. I go every 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
And but like the cleaning, just with the scraping, I can't, like, and we've been dealing with it our whole life.
Yeah.
But I'm just like clinched, and it's just horrible because you're that one sensitive. You're just waiting for that one moment where you're like, oh, God.
That was me.
Oh, gosh.
Nothing. Yeah, that's
fucking
the
worst.
And afterwards, after I got the root canal, I was scared, still scared to eat just because, you know, I'll bite down
pain.
On
I can't even imagine.
I was eating matzo ball soup, and the matzo ball sent me to the ground. That's how... a matzo ball sent me to
took
the ground.
You
took me out. I was rolling on the ground.
Where'd you eat matzo ball soup?
From Art's Deli on Ventura.
Yeah.
And I ordered it because, you know, that's our deli. And
is that a good deli?
Yeah, it's good.
I don't know anything about it.
We go there almost every week. It's been there a long time.
Yeah? It's like real Jewish style deli?
I don't know what real Jewish style is. I think so.
No, but I mean, I never heard of the deli. Like, I know one deli or two delis. Like, I go to Cantor's and then there's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's Greenblatt's, which I never go to. I don't know. It's not something I do all the time.
I actually grew up going to... my family, we went to Jewish delis all the time. We went to Factor's on Pico.
Factor's out on Pico. That's gone.
No, that's there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean by Fox?
Yes.
Right across from. What am I thinking of? Junior's.
Junior's is gone. It's another deli now. Yeah.
So you grew up eating at Factor's?
Yeah. My family, we went like every couple weeks. We'd go to Factor's and then we'd go to Junior's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So were you grew up in that part of town, the west side?
Yeah.
Your whole life?
Born and raised. Yeah.
But your folks are not from here?
No, they immigrated from Korea in the early 70s.
Was that like a time where a lot of people immigrated or they just came?
You know, they came, I think, before the bigger wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's when a lot of Koreans started coming.
And how come, why do you think they settled in Los Angeles? Do you have family here?
Well, my dad had a job here. So my dad was here before my mom. I don't know what exactly brought him to LA. He lived in San Francisco.
Yeah.
A lot of Asian immigrants, they go to San Francisco.
Why is that?
I don't know. Other people like them there, I guess.
I guess because it's where I guess there's a deeper history to a lot of that stuff. Because living here, you know, apparently it's like a huge Armenian community.
Yeah, that's right.
And
a lot of Koreans here.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
I just don't know how that starts or who makes the decision. You know what I mean? Like, is there a newsletter that goes out that we've decided this is it?
I think it's just friends.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's
and family.
True. Yeah.
And they say, hey, it's safe here. Come,
right.
You
right.
know?
There's enough of us here to find solace and protection.
If one of us gets attacked, there'll be a couple of us to help out.
To watch our back.
Yeah.
So he started in San Francisco.
Started
and came
in San Francisco.
Here?
Yeah. And then he went. He was a busboy at this restaurant in Sausalito, this French restaurant, and then he ended up in Paris.
Paris.
Yeah. Studying French. Like, I don't know. I don't fully.
This part of your dad's life is vague.
a little bit.
A busboy in Sausalito, and then Paris.
Yeah, and then Paris. And I think the owner of the restaurant in Sausalito had something to do with him going. Like, he really liked my dad.
Right.
And then he ended up in L.A., went back to Korea, met my mom, who was still in college at the time, and when she finished, she came down here.
Does he know French?
Yeah.
He can still do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And what did he end up doing?
He ended up, for a good part of my childhood, he worked for this stuffed toys company, just like in the offices, you know. And apparently I was named after one of his coworkers that he liked.
Yeah. At the stuffed toy factory?
Yeah, at the stuffed toy factory. And then that company moved, and he didn't want to move the family out to another state. So he ended up just working a bunch of different jobs.
Yeah.
And then eventually he ran a one-hour photo, his own one-hour photo.
He had a franchise?
No, just one little shop.
Yeah.
One little shop on Main Street in Santa Monica. And then the digital age just kind of
pushed
wiped
him out.
That out. Yeah.
he was the bitter one-hour photo guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had our time.
Yeah, it was just bad timing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just all, you know. And then he's actually at a souvenir shop and working with family members and on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He can't stop working.
He doesn't want it.
He doesn't want.
What about your mom?
My mom, she's retired, and she ended up working at UCLA for like 30 plus years as an accountant for the student store.
So that's where the family got the health insurance and
everything.
Your mom had the stable.
She had the stable job.
Yeah.
And she was there for a long time. When I was a student there, she was working there.
And you got a lot of siblings?
Older brother.
Yeah. That's it. What's he do?
He works at a optometrist office. In Los Feliz.
So you're the only one that's in show business.
The only one. Yeah.
And now because it seems to me that like certainly people I've talked to, children of immigrants.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure. I've talked to several to sort of really kind of like be the one that, you know, that really becomes a success in an unquestionable way.
Yes, yes.
Because the parents sacrificed their lives.
Yeah,
you didn't
a lot
get
of
that
pressure.
Did you?
I did.
You did?
Of course I did. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got a lot of that pressure growing up.
And, yeah. What did they want you to do?
Come on, Mark. Doctor, you know this.
I do. But
Doctor, lawyer.
That was it?
That was it.
Because I don't know if, like, are those still good jobs? Are they still considered good jobs? I mean, I know they're respectable, the doctors are at least, but I don't know, is lawyer really something parents want their kids to do still?
They make money.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're safer bets in terms of, if you follow this path, if you take these classes,
security, they want to know that you're on. They don't want it to be questionable. They know that if you take these steps, you will get to this place.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Whereas if you're, you know, I mean, you start out being an actor or a comedian, like there's no path. You know?
And I'd like to think that the most of the judgment that parents have about that stuff is concern.
Yeah,
like more than anything else.
You know, it took me a long time to kind of realize that. You know, I think early on it was a lot of
judgment. You thought it was just judgment.
Yeah, just you don't believe in me. You don't think I'm talented.
Right, right.
You know, which they didn't. But
but ultimately, maybe it comes from a good place.
It totally. They love us. So they don't want us to you know, be broke and
a burden on them.
Yeah, and a burden on them. All of those things I was for a good part of my adult life, you know.
So when do you, like, did you make any movement towards being a doctor or a lawyer, or did you?
Well, when I was in college at UCLA, I was not going to be a doctor or a lawyer, but I thought maybe I'd be a professor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought maybe...
Of what?
I was thinking of, like, Asian American studies, history, things that I was interested in at UCLA. And I thought that would, you know, I would, as a professor, publish books and write, you know, and that sounded pretty good to my parents.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. He sold them?
Yeah. Yeah, I sold them. So I kind of started gearing myself towards that route, even though at the time I had... co-founded this theater company on the college campus, and I was spending most of my time doing that stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, so you studied, you did study, like, what was the focus?
I majored in English, in like creative writing.
Too. Yeah.
And then I minored in Asian American studies. I ended up doing a two-year master's program in Asian American studies.
Oh, really?
And thinking I was going to become this professor
of Asian American studies.
Yeah.
When what is the reach of that? When it seems like it's pretty broad.
Yeah.
So what do you study exactly?
Well, I mean, my like primary interest was actually in like media, you know, like an Asian American kind of representation and the depictions of Asian Americans in media. So it was always like geared towards this interest that I had in my heart, you know.
Yeah, you're putting the philosophical foundations of your acting career.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, I was doing this theater company.
Well, what
and
was the theater company?
It was this Asian American theater company that I was involved with and I had co-founded on campus.
What was that called?
It was called LCC, it was called Lapu the Coyote That Cares Theater Company, and it's still going on to this day.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
It was
Ali Wong was a member of that company.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what's he? Are you older? Are you like
older? Yeah.
Than Ali?
She joined after I graduated.
So, because you guys did that great movie together, and she's written for Fresh Off the Boat. Yeah. Like, you guys have a long, but you didn't know each other in college?
We did know each other. Well, when she was in college. Yeah. And I was just out of grad school and, you know, still kind of hanging around that theater company because I, you know, didn't
you
know what
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a comedy-driven thing?
It was for sure, but it wasn't kind of a conscious, like, we're going to do comedy. It was
right.
Just kind of, I think that was just kind of our natural, that's what we like to do.
And sort of the intent of it was to sort of bring Asian Americans together to...
Well, you know, at the time it was primarily these, what we called South Campus majors, which was like, Asian American kids who are majoring in like math and sciences and becoming doctors,
right.
And, you know,
right.
And who kind of wanted to do this kind
right.
of thing, just kind of as a hobby, you know.
Right.
So we had a lot of these kids who are
brainy
or at least like artists who are trying to please their parents, you
right.
know?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we
yeah.
provided them this kind of outlet to kind of like I was, you
right.
know, at the time. And we just put on, we wrote all our own original like plays and material.
And you would perform it at the school?
Perform it at the school. We did a show every quarter. And that was pivotal for me. That was when I was like, okay, I know I want to do this. I know like I'm supposed to become a professor now, but
right.
this is what I really want to do. And we'll see what, you know,
did you keep that sort of the spirit of like, your knowledge of a lack of representation being one of the driving forces?
Yeah, yeah. I think at that time it was definitely, you know, I was in college. I was, for the first time in my life, surrounded by Asian Americans and very kind of suddenly conscious to these things, whereas growing up, I didn't think about it.
Right.
You know? I didn't.
You weren't surrounded by Asian Americans growing up?
No, no. I mean, I had a couple Asian friends that I grew up with, but it was predominantly everyone else.
It right.
was a part of LA that was very mixed, but there weren't a ton of other
right.
Asians. Yeah. So you know, we grew up knowing about race stuff
right.
because we were all so, you know, different of different backgrounds.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like this kind of conscious Asian American identity.
Right. And,
yeah.
and so, but did you find that at the time when you were in college that was sort of the first wave of that awareness culturally?
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in general, I you know, because like, I don't know much of anything that,
yeah.
you start to realize as, you know, as a white person and one that, you know, now, you know, has to admit a certain amount of privilege because it's true, but you don't think in those terms before because
right, yeah.
you're ignorant.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think it's racist, but you're just sort of like you take everything for granted.
You're just going through life.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
As a
yeah.
white person.
Yeah. yeah. Without
everything's working out.
Well, that was me growing up too, though.
As right.
You know, I was just, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, I'd watch Indiana Jones and I'd put myself in the boots of Indiana Jones.
Sure.
Not Short Round. You know what I mean? Like, and I thought, hey, Short Round's funny.
Right, but that
but
ain't
I
me.
Didn't, that's not me. I'm Indiana Jones, you know?
yeah.
And then you come, you grow up a little bit, step out in the world, and everyone's like, you're Short Round. I'm like, no, I'm Indiana Jones.
You don't get it. I got the hat and everything.
Yeah, I got the hat and the whip.
you come up against that. You felt that.
In college.
Yeah.
Yeah, in college. And I think that's what led to the formation of that theater company.
Well, in college, in which sense? In the sense that, because you just being in the population of college or and actually in acting?
Because
I don't know when bullying happens and I don't know when that sort of separation happens. I mean, when we're younger, everybody sort of integrates.
Yeah.
But when you do get to college, it's odd because you start to, groups aggregate.
Yes,
you know, for
yeah.
whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And you felt that there first?
Yeah, I know. I mean, growing up,
yeah.
I got bullied.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I got bullied. It wasn't always like, at least in my mind, because I was Asian. But,
yeah.
you know, in retrospect, that might have played a part of it.
Right.
I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But But yeah, I think just being around a community that was thinking of these things, you know,
right.
that was thinking of issues of representation and
yeah, because like you know, it seems that everybody gets characterized a certain way and mm-hmm. lumped together.
Yeah,
you know, even but it's weird because even you saying like you know like all these kind of like these kids that were trying to please their parents by doing math majors and biology yeah. majors had an outlet to yeah. at least pursue something that
yeah.
there was something. So the whole sort of like, I think that expectation of immigrant parents kind of helps set sort of the context of how Asian Americans are judged in a way.
Yeah,
in terms
for
of
sure.
their ambitions and what they're supposed to do.
For sure. But the parents aren't thinking of that, of
no,
the,
no,
of the
course
stereotypes.
Not.
You know, they don't, my parents, they don't. To this day, they don't care about the issues that I think a lot of. Us Asian Americans,
right.
kind of who were born here, or
yeah.
at least who spent a good part of our childhood here,
right.
here about, you know, they're just trying to provide.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when, were you guys writing to this, were you creating pieces around
yeah.
this stuff?
Yeah, that... we were. I mean, pretty, pretty bad stuff.
yeah.
but yeah, we were writing about, you know, kind of everything. We didn't know what the hell we were doing.
Right.
You know, because
sure.
we didn't, we just didn't have a lot of us. It was new for all of us. We didn't go to plays growing up. You
no,
know, we
right.
didn't. We didn't. You know what it meant to write a play.
But you watched sketch shows.
We watched sketch shows.
Right.
We watched. Yeah, we watched movies. We
right.
watched TV, and we were just kind of figuring it out. And it was so fun because of that. We
right.
didn't know what the hell we were doing. We
right.
had no rules.
Did anybody
know?
Step in? Was there anybody among you that knew how to direct or anything? How many people were in the core group?
I think there must have been like 12,
uh-huh.
13 in that core group.
And did you register it as a club on campus?
Yeah, we did.
So
we
you
did.
Had your own room and you
we
had a
did.
Space.
We had space to rehearse. We had a theater on campus, the Northwest Campus Auditorium, which was kind of tucked in by the dorm.
And you set all this in motion?
Me and two others.
Yeah.
The three of us. Yeah. Yeah. We put it together and I can't believe it's still going on. It's crazy.
And have you checked back in with it?
Do you
ever go to the shows?
No. Over the years, though, I mean, here and there, I would come back and talk to the kids. And,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm due to come back. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So they know that you're the guy that started it?
I think so. Yeah.
yeah. You're like
yeah.
the historical figure. This
yeah.
small picture of you somewhere hanging.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Out of that original crew, how many people sort of went into show business?
A bunch.
Really?
yeah, we made a lot of parents mad.
you succeeded in
yeah.
your revolution.
Yeah. A bunch of us, especially from that early group, you know, like, I don't know. I'd say a third of that early group ended up going into it.
Are they
yeah.
still in it?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah a lot thriving. A lot of them, you know, in different capacities.
Sure,
you know, writers.
Yeah,
executives. You know.
Yeah.
Are
you guys still in touch?
Yeah, yeah, we all keep in touch.
That's wild.
Yeah, when we had our Always Be My Maybe premiere, you know, Allie was in the company,
sure.
and
yeah.
we a bunch of, and it was our premiere was at. In Westwood, right
yeah,
by
yeah.
UCLA,
right.
So a bunch of us from the old back in the day came to the premiere, and it was real cool.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, it was really cool.
Now, do you feel that there? Well, obviously, there's been progress. Do you feel in terms yeah. of representation and in terms of like, because it seemed like it's a really odd thing. The struggle for African Americans to you know, against this depiction of them. In general, in film and television, you know, was always a part of the cultural awareness. But I don't think that, you know, I really took into mind, you know, the struggle of Asian Americans to sort of find that place. I knew there were movies, but it was always really a big deal when
yeah.
a movie was made about a multi-generational Asian family.
yeah.
Like, look at the food. There's always a lot of food involved.
Oh, yeah, there's always food involved. yeah.
But do you feel that now that there is a broader acceptance?
Yeah. I think.
Well, fresh off the boat's a good example. Ali Wong's success is a great example.
I think so. And you know, just kind of the fact that these projects or and these people are out there in the mainstream, not just performing for other Asian Americans or Asian
people. Right. That's usually what happens too.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, it's a broad. I mean, Ali's success is like it's insane. It's amazing.
It's amazing. I mean, it's not surprising to
me. No, of course not.
But it is amazing.
I have to assume that those audiences aren't all Asian American.
Yeah,
90 shows that she's doing in San Francisco.
She's doing 90 shows. It's crazy. She did like 40 here in L.A. at the one on Wilshire and Wiltern.
Oh, at the Wiltern.
Yeah, she did a ton.
Crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy, but it's great.
It is
great. Yeah,
and I think it's empowering for not just women, but obviously for Asian Americans too, right? I find like I don't talk to a lot of Asian Americans, so now you're the representative. but it's so amazing how much white people take for granted. we've all been eating Chinese food or Thai food or Korean food, whatever we eat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's usually where it starts. We go to that restaurant.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just sort of a lack of empathy to, connect lives and struggle to the people whose food you're eating.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's all there.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why you see it so much in our projects, because it is like
the food is something we can all come
of who we are.
So you did a master's program. You did a master's in what?
In Asian American studies.
Oh, so you really kind of hung in there with that.
Yeah, I was, for sure. It was something I was very interested in.
And that was 2 years?
That was 2 years, yeah.
And then when did you just decide I'm going to act? How did that happen? How did you go about it?
Well, I think it was many, many years after that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the expectations of my parents were, it was like they were just fighting up against what I really wanted to do. And I kind of, after grad school, I just kind of worked these regular jobs. I was a graphic designer, just trying to figure it out.
Were you fighting with your folks?
Yeah, a little bit. And then, and slowly I'd kind of hint to them, I think I want to do this. And they'd be like, no, you're not going to do well in that. It's so hard.
So the character in the movie is sort of like something you could relate to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that could have been your destiny.
It could have. Yeah, it was. I mean, I was in my 30s living at home.
Ugh.
Yeah, because I was... at that point, I was like actually pursuing acting, but I wasn't really telling my parents because every time I tell them, they would stress how much of a failure I would be.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because look, my mom worked at UCLA and she worked with a lot of students. Or former students who had just graduated UCLA and were now pursuing acting.
Yeah.
But needed a job on the side, so they'd work in this accounting department with my mom, and she'd like see their like reels,
Yeah.
And I remember she showed me one of her coworkers like reels and was like, "This guy is incredible."
Yeah.
But this guy's working with me at this. That's how hard it is, And I remember looking at this guy's reel. I was like, "This guy is incredible." So it scared me.
She's trying to scare you straight.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it was because she loved me and she didn't want me to have a tough time. And
so you're at home in your 30s.
Like, and I had a tough time, man.
A graphic designer?
Yeah, because when I was at that theater company in college, we'd have to make flyers for our shows, we had to put them all around campus, So I picked up some
skills. You got your chops.
Basic graphic design skills, that carried me into these jobs post college.
But didn't your parents know that you were kind of like unhappy and wallow or floundering in that? Or what were they expecting to happen with the graphic design?
I think they were hoping that I would, kind of be like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm going to go to law school.
Right.
Or I think that's right.
It's only a matter of time. Yeah. Any day now.
Yeah. So meanwhile, I was going to these auditions. I was doing, improv. I was doing stand up for a little while.
You did?
I did. A certain point, Allie had moved up to San Francisco. I'd go up to San Francisco, and she'd show me all around the rooms. I'd perform with her at all these like different rooms in San Francisco. Met a bunch of your friends up in San Francisco at the time.
So you're sneaking around doing this stuff.
Yeah,
because you're living at home and you're doing graphic design.
Yeah.
And then you'd go and so when you went up to San Francisco, how many times did you do stand up
a bunch of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
So
bunch of times.
And how was it for you?
It was great.
Yeah,
it was so fun. Yeah. I loved it. I especially going up there. And I wished that I had lived up there sometimes, because just it was a real community, you know, of comedians.
Oh yeah, it's a comedy city. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, it is here too, but it's different here.
It's different here. I mean, if you were where I was at the time, you couldn't book 5 minutes.
I guess it was really before all the Bringer shows and everything.
Yeah,
else.
Yeah. But I was doing those Bringer. Yeah. Shows, and I was performing.
Allie middled for me up there. She featured for me once when I was at the Punchline. I remember.
Oh,
her.
Yeah.
So crazy.
It's crazy.
So how much time were you in college together?
We weren't. Well, I had graduated.
You're in master's program, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was right when I had graduated that program is when she joined the company.
And you guys stayed friends.
Yeah, we stayed friends.
I like these stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like I've known comics for 30 or 40 years, but like when you both kind of do different things and still stay
beforehand,
friends.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Did she feel bad for you? Were you like when you were like,
back then?
Yeah, like sort of like, oh no, he needs.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, she lived in San Francisco at the time because she had moved back up, and I was.
Her folks were there?
Her family was there, yeah. And I was just doing, you know, I was just trying to make it down here. I don't think she, you know, she kind of saw too much of my struggle.
Well, when did you sort of get like any sort of thing going? Like what happened?
You know, it was just a slow build, you know, book a commercial, you know, and I'd be like, oh, wow. I felt like I made it. I booked my first commercial. It's just like, it was on the Asian channel. It was all in Mandarin. I didn't even know what the hell I was selling, you know? But I was like, oh, I made it. And then, you know, and then a year would pass. I'd book another commercial and I'd be like, oh, this one's in English. And, you know, and then another one. Oh, it's a national one. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a kind of, and then a co-star on a show. And then.
Oh, yeah. So then, like all this auditioning, it didn't beat you up? I mean, you weren't.
It had beat me up.
It did beat you.
I think permanent damage.
Every time you come home and see your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't even tell her, could you?
No, I couldn't tell her when I booked something because, you know, it would be like, okay, how much did you get paid? You know, what does that lead to? Like, well, nothing.
Right.
It just kind of airs and disappears.
It's a commercial. You can all watch it together.
You didn't have any lines in that. Yeah, I know, but I was featured prominently.
So it was just that for many years.
Yeah, for many years.
So what was the co-starring role you got?
My first one was a show called Fastlane.
Yeah.
It was on Fox.
Right.
And,
so you had representation at some point.
I had representation and, you know, I had a commercial agent at least and just kind of kept at it. I kept doing these live shows, these sketch shows. And
where were they?
They were all around town, you know.
Oh, so you're part of that, the UCB trip? Or
I wasn't.
What were the sketch shows? Were they Asian sketch shows?
Some of them were just kind of with friends from these comedy schools that I was in at the time.
You went to comedy schools?
Well, I mean, like, you know, like improv kind of, there was this place called Acme.
Oh, yeah, Acme,
It was kind of like, you know, the Groundlings.
It was like on La Brea or something?
Yeah, exactly. I was you know,
Acme Comedy
there.
Theater.
Yeah, yeah. And they had their own kind of improv school. And
what happened in that place?
I don't know.
It kind of went away?
Yeah, I think it's a rental space now, I think. I don't really know what's going on.
Didn't take.
No.
So you're just learning those kind of skills, doing group improv?
Yeah, really just to keep doing stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
because
that was my thing, was like, I'm not like booking jobs.
Right.
I just want to keep doing everything.
So you didn't lose your mind and sadness.
So it felt like I was actually like acting and doing comedy, and I just kept doing it, or else I would have definitely like quit and try to become a lawyer.
Yeah. So when did, what was the first, you know, tangible?
The first big.
What was the first one you could really be proud of and show your parents?
You know what?
You still haven't told them yet?
I still haven't showed them anything.
Yeah. Soon.
Well, you know, I think the interview was, yeah. Ironically, of all projects, that was the kind of one that really, like, my parents were like, oh, he's like...
He's working,
and he's... He's taking care of himself.
You know? Right. Because they saw you in other movies.
Yeah. But you know,
but in small parts,
and little
didn't add up to a life.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think you know, at a certain point, they would just see me on TV all the time, and I think they really kind of put it together. Like, oh, he's working, which is amazing.
And working towards something. Like, you did soap operas and everything.
I did anything, man. I would do anything. I literally needed the money, you know.
Yeah.
Because at certain points, I moved out of the house, got my own place, had to move back, and then moved out again, you know.
Really?
Because I kept becoming broke, you know.
Oh, see, oh my God. So you had these parents... And you'd have to kind of go back.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I only realized this with perspective now, is that they were supporting my dream all along. You know, they were like literally housing me and feeding me during this time, you know.
They could have held a harder line.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
they
said,
could've.
You know, you can't come back.
Yeah, yeah, they could have. They didn't. They would never do that. I mean, to this day, they'd take me in. You know, they're great parents. You know, but I think when the interview came out, or kind of came out, because it didn't really come out, but
at least you had some notoriety.
I was in the Korean newspaper. Put it that way.
They were getting calls from Korea?
Yeah, from their family. So I think at that point they were like, wow, he's playing a big part in a big movie. And I think they kind of turned around then.
Well, I mean, that part was a very specific part.
Yeah.
And to play Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
I mean, were they nervous?
No.
Okay.
No, but the entire rest of the world was, you know?
But your parents were just happy you were working.
Yeah. I talked with them before I even took the part, like, do you think this is, like, going to be a problem or, you know? And they were like, no.
What do you mean, to play the dictator?
Yeah. I talked to a bunch of people because I didn't, you know, I really wanted to do it. I loved the script. I felt like it was...
What were your concerns?
Well, I mean, I didn't know enough about...
Oh, the dynamics of North and South Korea, or who
I mean, I knew
was.
A little bit, growing up, but I didn't know enough, and I learned a lot during that time.
What'd you learn? That kind of gave you enough confidence to do it.
Well, I learned that it wasn't... At least in my head, or at least from what people would tell me, it wasn't as scary a threat as like everyone to Korea, to South Korea.
Oh, right.
And that as far as
they've been living with it for years.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that I don't know. Everything that eventually happened was a big surprise, put it that way. Like, as far as just
in terms of the whole world freaking out?
Yeah.
That he was that sensitive and we were all thought we were on the precipice of nuclear war because of you?
Yeah. And my parents were just like thrilled.
They were. People know who you are now.
Yeah, kinda.
Right.
Yeah. So when that came out, it was insane. And then it just kind of one day all just stopped. It was, you know, the next news item came on, and that thing just got pushed aside. And
did you have to move back into the house?
No.
After that, you were out on your own?
Well, at that point, I was married.
And, so you were working and everything was good.
Yeah, we had a kid. And
how many kids you got?
Just one. One.
But you did, but you were doing like, it seems like you were doing a lot of like TV bits and, some funny shit. You know,
I was, at a certain point, it just kind of, the work just became kind of steady and I kept working. And
Now at that time though, were you feeling, you know, given the, you know, your past studies and also some of the intentions around creating the theater company, did you feel that you were being treated as something other than an Asian prop for the most part?
Early on, I definitely felt that a lot.
Yeah.
But I needed money, you know?
No, I'm not judging it. I'm just saying, like, you know, given what you were coming from intellectually.
Yeah. I mean, an Asian prop in the sense that, you know, I was there to kind of add color to a scene.
Right.
You know, I was there to create the world around these main characters.
Did you ever have those moments? Because I notice it all the time where you see, you know, this kind of like multicultural group of friends and you realize like, that would never happen.
Yes, but also that was my childhood.
So, it does happen.
Yeah, it does happen. I mean,
it's not all contrived. Yeah.
I mean, my childhood was a Benetton ad. You know, it was just completely diverse.
And, yeah. That's what America is really, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I
do see that, I mean, especially being an actor and being playing that, you know, you do realize that it's really, you are kind of a prop, you know, like you are there to show the world that this main character isn't racist. He has friends of color, you know?
It's so hard for me to judge what is real, what isn't, because I've lived the life of a comic for so long. I don't go to a workplace.
Yeah.
I don't have regular friends, you know, that just have regular jobs. I have no idea how anybody fucking lives.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all a lot more integrated than I have, than I know.
I don't know about that, but... but certainly my life has been that, especially my childhood.
I saw somewhere at some point you wrote and acted in some movie, a feature.
Yeah, yeah. Well, aside from Always Be My Maybe, there was one way back in the day a friend and I just wrote and
shot
made it independently, and it was real scrappy and made it.
Were you still in college or?
No, I was out of college at that point. I was definitely.
What was that about?
Gosh, it was called American Fusion, and it was. I don't even remember, man. I don't remember, but it was definitely, for me, kind of my first taste of actually like seeing something I wrote in feature form. And that was really like thrilling and definitely kind of planted the seed where I got to do that again, you know, and I didn't do it again till Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, really? You didn't do shorts or anything?
I mean,
else?
Yeah, I did a ton of shorts. I mean, after that, I started making stuff.
Yeah.
And I was making shorts and web series. And there is this group called Channel 101 in LA, and just this web series kind of showcase / competition. I was involved with those people and kept making web series and shorts and just, you know, exercising that muscle. So it was all rooted in that college theater company where we just wrote stuff and performed it and got to see
it. And it also gives you a little more control.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it keeps you sane.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Hold on a sec. I told these guys to come. This is like the bane of my existence. Like, either I'm going to have to start.
Are they in your yard?
Yeah, of course they are.
Oh.
But, like, you know, I called the guy yesterday and I said, can you come? Make sure they come between 11 and 1.
Yeah.
No dice.
Oh.
It's okay. People have learned how to deal with it.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. It doesn't read as much as it bothers me, apparently. But the idea of, because like just being an actor, like I've noticed this because I've been doing acting lately and it came to it very later in life.
You're amazing.
Well, that's very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that, you know, like to actually have that be your life and to be beholden to other people and just waiting for material and then just showing up to do it, as satisfying as it might be incrementally, it's really a compromised position in a weird way, especially if you're not in the power, you don't have power over you know, enough traction to really decide what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd imagine you as a stand-up for all these years, yeah. You are telling your story.
Yeah, right.
And then when you're acting in someone else's thing, you're telling a story. But,
right.
But it's not your story, necessarily.
Yeah, and I didn't think of it, and like, you know, and you're just sort of like a guy working there.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm fine to do,
yeah.
Just from all those years of just like, oh, I just need to work, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
like,
sure.
I'm happy to do that, but there is a very special feeling to create your own stuff.
So what was the process, you know, because I talked to Ali, I think, like, wow, I mean, I talked to Nanochka.
Yeah, yeah.
About the movie, yeah. But I didn't talk to Ali specifically about the movie because I think when I talked to her, she was just starting to break as a comic.
Yeah.
So I don't know that when you started working on it, but I talked to Ali and she, you know, breastfed in front of me.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah, I think I handled it pretty well. But that was really in promotion for Baby Cobra. So were you guys already working on it then, or when?
No, we weren't. We weren't. It was after Baby Cobra. Well, after Baby Cobra, the New Yorker did a profile on her. That's
right.
That's how big she was at the, you know.
Right.
The New Yorker did a profile
on her. But she was writing for Fresh Off the Boat, right?
I think she was.
Or just stopping?
I think
she
was off Fresh Off the Boat at that time.
But you've been at Fresh Off the Boat since the beginning.
Six seasons, yeah. Yeah, we just got canceled.
You did?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Isn't a new season starting?
This is our sixth.
Oh.
Sixth and final.
When did you hear that it was done?
A month back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So we just finished our last episode a couple weeks ago.
And you did, what were the cycles? They were 13 a season or 23 a season?
First season was 13. After that, it was mostly 20s all the way through. And this last season was 15.
So there's enough to syndicate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we hit 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hit 100 and... It's been great.
So, well, yeah, okay, I guess before we get to this, so how did you get cast on that? Is it during the movies or after the movies? Or
I was doing it. I was doing it. Jake Kasdan was
right.
directing this movie, and he's a producer on it.
Right,
And
nice guy.
Yeah, great guy. And I was doing another bit part in a movie that he was directing. We're shooting in Boston,
which movie?
It was called Sex Tape.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and co-producer Melvin Marr was there, and who also produces Fresh Off the Boat, and he knocked on my trailer door, and I was just doing a couple days on that movie, but he handed me this book called Fresh Off the Boat, and was like, "Hey, read this book. We want to turn it into a TV show, and we're thinking about you for the dad."
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, good luck with that.
Why?
Because there were no Asians on TV like that at the time. You
right.
know? I mean, the last one before that was...
Margaret?
Margaret.
Right.
Yeah, and that was like 20-something years before
that. Is
that
true?
An Asian family
I
on network
true,
TV.
Huh?
Yeah. So I was like, that's a great thought. It probably won't happen.
Yeah.
But I will read the book, and I read the book. Book's amazing.
Yeah.
And still not going to happen.
Right.
You know. And then one day I get a call. We're going to make a pilot. We want you to play the dad. And
right.
I was like, I can't believe that. Well, let's shoot a pilot.
Yeah.
And because that's all there's going to be is a pilot. So let's have fun on this pilot, you know.
You really had the good attitude going.
Well, I mean, you think about that,
sure.
You know.
Yeah. What are the possibilities?
Well, yeah. What's the possibility of any pilot going to series,
sure, right?
Let alone
an Asian American.
An Asian family with me as the lead. I'm doing a day on Sex Tape and I'm going to be the lead of a show, you know, like. Not going to happen.
Boy, the notion of failure really got pounded into you.
Pounded into me. And completely okay with it.
Yeah.
That's how pounded it was into me. I'm so used to the failing. And then we made the pilot. Lynn Shelton, the great Lynn Shelton, directed it. It was great. It was so fun. I was like, there's no way. There's no chance. We're going to get picked up to series. We got picked up the series. I was like, let's enjoy this one season.
Well, I guess there's something good about looking at things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way that keeps your expectations in check.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not even in a dark way, in a great way.
Sure.
Like in a real, like, let's really just enjoy this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you did.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And then after that season, they wanted to do another season. Really?
Well, this is definitely it.
Yeah. This is definitely it. And then we kept going for six seasons. Yeah.
It's so nice. And then did your parents come to the set and stuff?
No.
Did they watch it on television?
No. Oh yeah, yeah. No, no. Okay, they did. They actually watched every episode.
Uh huh.
They didn't tell me that till like recently.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They watched every episode. They're very proud.
And they're able
thrilled.
To show that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
nice. I mean, I think they're happy because I'm taking care of myself.
Right. Of course.
And the family. So.
And there's no hint of them saying like, if it still doesn't work out, you don't feel that.
No, not at this point. Not at this point.
Because like, you know, when you think about Dr. Ken, he had to deal with that shit. Like he actually did.
He did it.
What was expected of him.
Yeah.
And now it took him years to even stop renewing his license to practice medicine.
And then he pivoted. That's kind of the ultimate what he did, you know.
Right,
because,
right. Like, he shut his parents up. And then he can always say, like, I can always go back to being a doctor.
Yes, he still had his license. And he amazes me, that guy. I can't believe he pulled that off. But yeah.
I remember the first time I talked to him, I had to fight the urge to, you know, I had some health, I thought I had some health issues. Like, they came very close to me asking for medical advice.
Right.
I think I might have called him once.
Right.
To get some medical advice. That's funny.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I don't blame you. This past week, I was on the verge of calling
Ken.
I'm in pain, man.
Are you guys friends?
Yeah.
So, six seasons, and this is it.
This is it.
How did that... Was with in terms of writing the You'll Always Be My Maybe, which how'd that movie do ultimately?
It did great.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, it did great. I mean, I think it was in the first 4 weeks, the 32 million households.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is real nice. I mean, I don't know what any of that
really means,
but it supposedly it was
I thought you were I thought you were great in it. I thought that character was sort of a heartbreaking. That's and I think it's across the board relatable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when
yeah.
she goes back and the band or whatever.
The band, yeah.
It's so harsh, man.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
that was sort of the equivalent of you living at your parents' house.
Totally the equivalent. Yeah.
You knew that guy.
That was me. Yeah.
And what was the writing process? How'd you guys do it?
It was fun.
Who had the idea of the story?
I think we just kind of came up with it together. We just met regularly, talked it through, and started working on an outline and put as much of our lives in it that made sense, you know, and made up a bunch of other stuff. And it felt super organic. And I think it helped that we were old friends and we ended up bringing in another friend who was a writer who had been doing real well in the industry as a writer, who also came from that theater company in college.
Oh, really?
And the three of us ended up crafting the script.
There was a deal with Netflix, or who were
we? Once we finished a draft of the script, we sent it to Netflix. I was like, "Do you want to do this?"
And Ninotchka was always on board.
Not at that point.
Oh,
not
really?
At that point, she was attached to another movie.
Oh, okay.
She was supposed to direct another movie as her like directorial debut, and then that one kind of fell through, and then we were like, we got to get her.
And she was cool. She was open to it.
Yeah, because we were working with her on Fresh Off the Boat for so long. We love her and worship her in many ways.
Yeah.
And she was down, and we felt so lucky.
What happens now? What have you been doing?
I'm unemployed.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling incredible.
Because of the tooth.
Because of the root canal.
The root canal worked out.
So I don't care. Yeah. I don't know.
Today, you don't give a shit.
Tomorrow, I'll be miserable.
But like in terms of, I'm going to wait till they get off the porch. I can feel them vibrating. I've lost my shit about this before.
Oh, really?
And it's like completely within my control, but I thought I took care of it yesterday. I texted the gardener and I said, could you tell them to come between 11 and 1? Because I got to interview Lily Tomlin in a couple hours.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I just didn't want it to.
Well, better them doing this on me. I like that stuff when I listen to podcasts and I hear like police sirens in the back, the noise.
Sure,
I love it. But
yeah, no, I think it really adds texture to the thing.
Yeah, it's real.
But like I get, so there's some days there, with this thing where you, when you live in LA, where you realize there isn't really an hour or two where it's not happening somewhere close by.
For sure.
Like I notice that now, like, and it just like if I lock into it, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if it's not my yard, it's across the street or next door.
It's
ongoing leaf blower noise.
But you have no control over that. You know, it's like just.
How are you at letting go of things? You don't get obsessed with shit.
I just got a root canal, Mark. No. I'm cool with anything. I don't care.
What drugs are you on? What did they give you before you left the dentist? Are you? But there was no pain with the root canal, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, like,
it was
just the
7 days before. Intense pain.
I just can't. I got so upset. Like I kind of got. I was sort of like, who the hell just figured that out? Like it's almost like making jewelry that they like they
it is with a little like
and they're scraping out these nerve canals.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's amazing.
Only to fill them up to make a post for a fake tooth, as opposed to bolt one into your head.
It's amazing.
It really is.
Yeah.
But all right, so you're done. But
so,
like
done.
But now like, is it in syndication?
I mean, I don't really.
You don't know?
I don't know what that means nowadays.
I don't either. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, technically yes.
Yeah.
Technically yes. And
so that's nice because you've done enough episodes to where, like, even if you don't work for a year, you're probably making enough residual money to keep your health insurance.
Are you saying I'm not going to work for the next year?
Well, I'm saying that. Sorry, you've influenced me. I'm just saying you won't have to go back home at this point.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's incredible.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
You're vested in the union. I usually, as I get older, it's what I think about is health insurance. I don't care if you work for a year.
Yeah.
But like as long as you can keep the insurance.
That's it. I mean, during the 7 days of extreme pain.
Yeah.
At one of the days, I was in so much pain. My wife was like, "Why don't you just go to urgent care? You know, go and
right."
But I, because of all those years of being broke and not having health insurance,
right.
And I had it stuck in my head that I will never go to a doctor. I don't care what's happening.
Right.
I will not go to a doctor because I can't be saddled with those bills.
Right.
You know? And it's just that kind of stayed with me. I didn't even think of it as an option.
It's sort of terrifying and it's a weird scramble, but you realize that like so many people don't do, that's why so many people get sick.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Because it'll bankrupt them.
It'll bankrupt them.
What a dumb country we live in. But what are you thinking about doing? Are you thinking about writing more? Do you want to
for sure
branch out? Do you want to direct things?
Yes, for sure. I actually directed the series finale of our show.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did, and that was really fun.
Were you in it though too?
I mean, was in it too.
It's kind of tricky, right?
It was a little tricky. It was a little tricky, but you know, I'd been on the show for 6 years,
right?
At that point, and
you knew what was expected of you.
I had a lot of help. Yeah. had a lot of help.
Yeah, it's a nice way to enter the guild.
The best way.
And to sort of get the one under the belt.
For sure.
But like you don't really feel like you're really directed.
No, because it's a show.
Because you're jumping out in front of the camera every 5 minutes
and then you're looking at
playback.
It's a show that has been around for a while
and has its own style, its own, you know.
Everybody on the set at that point knows what to do.
You didn't need to be an auteur. You weren't breaking any rules or pushing the envelope.
No, was not doing any single shot sequences.
But now you get to pay money to be in the guild. You're in.
Yeah.
So now you're ready to go.
For sure. That's something I'd love to do. And
are you writing now? You are.
Started this production company. We got a deal over at the 20th. So with two friends from the college group? Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's crazy.
And they're writers, or
one of them's a writer, one of them had become an executive. and a producer. And
so he's working with you at the production
the
company?
The three of us, yeah.
That's your production company.
Yeah, we're like, we want to tell Asian American stories.
Yeah.
Who wants to give us a deal?
Right.
And we got a lot of offers. And I was like, I can't believe this, that we're getting offers to tell these stories that we did in college, you know?
It's amazing. You're doing exactly what you set out to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing.
And it honors your intellectual sort of ambition.
Yeah.
Like you now you are sort of a professor.
And I'm working with friends. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Well, that, you know, like that what you're able to teach in light of what you wanted to teach, you probably have a much broader and bigger audience to do it now.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm having more fun.
Yeah.
And doing it with friends,
hands
which was
on.
Always the goal.
Well, like what are some of the first projects? So you got anything on the docket or nothing?
No.
It just started.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah, so are you taking submissions and that kind of shit?
We're doing all that and trying because I write and we have another writer in our little group that we're kind of creating stuff in house
We got offices on the lot.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's super cool.
That's pretty big time. So you're down. Well, you're down by where you grew up.
Yeah, right where I grew up.
You can go right to Factors. A couple times a week.
It's right down the block. Yeah. Yeah. And I do that. I'll cruise over to Factors.
Do your folks still live in the area?
Yeah. They're right there. Same house.
No.
I grew up in. Yeah.
See, and your office is down the street?
Right down the street. I played Little League across the street.
From Fox.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all
so now you
very
can,
surreal.
Like, have lunch with your mom?
Yeah. All that.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks, Mark.
It's great talking to you, man.
Great talking to you, too.
I'm glad I got you on the nice, on the upswing with the tooth.
Oh, man, best day ever. Thank you.
What a pleasant conversation that was. That guy's great. He's funny. He's sharp. I really enjoy talking to him. The final season of Fresh Off the Boat on ABC. It starts Friday, January 17th. And there's a special one-hour series finale on Friday, February 21st. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for links to the tickets for the winter tour dates with me and Del Rey, Orlando, and Grand Rapids. Step up. No music today. I'm in a hotel room in Georgia. Boomer lives!